From the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, this is Veterans Radio. And now, here's your host, Gary Lilly.
Good morning. Good morning to our active duty military, wherever you are. We appreciate what you're doing for us, keeping us safe in this war on terror. Good morning to the veterans out there. Thank you for your service. Good morning, America. And good morning to all our friends down there in Australia and Tasmania. I'm Gary Lilly. I'm your host today. And the air boss is the old paratrooper, Bob Gould.
Hey, I would say younger and very much in shape. You got it all the way.
Okay. Bob, if you hear me whistling today, I'm not whistling at you. I broke a tooth. So, folks, I've heard myself whistling all week long. I thought, oh, no, and I got a show coming up.
Ouch.
Yes. Today's show is Battlefield Promises, and that's what people that in the height of terror made a promise to God, get me through this, and I'll serve you the rest of my life.
I can't wait to hear that. We've all been in that situation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some more than others.
Get me through this, and I'll do whatever.
Yep. But right now, we're going to start off with a lady who's doing a very, very special thing for our old war dogs. Not old either. Debbie Candle, you've got a war dog yourself, retired Benny B163. Good morning to you, Debbie.
Good morning, Gary. How are you?
Oh.
Thank you. I wish to express my heartfelt thanks to you and Veterans Radio for having me on.
Well,
thank you so much.
We've done a couple of shows on war dogs, and they have given so much for our country and for our troops. And what was happening to them, or has been happening to them, is not very thankful. Tell us what's happening to the war dogs and what you're doing to, and others are doing to help take care of them.
I would love to. Thank you for this opportunity. Before I start, though, I do want to thank all the veterans who are listening for their service to keeping our country free and for allowing us to enjoy the fruits of democracy. And I just feel like saying veterans rock. But today I want to talk to you about another kind of American veteran who gives service before self.
Well, it's an honor and a privilege for us, but the others really don't know what they're doing. But they're doing it well. They're just, go ahead and tell us about the war dogs.
Right, they don't know until in retrospect. But the military working dogs are another kind of American veteran, and they give service before self and excellence in all they do on a daily basis. And they're selfless canines, and they've changed the battle's outcomes many times, saving countless American lives. And in November of 2006, President Clinton signed a bill allowing civilians to adopt these dogs. And canines who are suitable for civilian adoption after passing the adoption suitability test can experience a loving family and a comfortable retirement. And in January of 2008, just this past January, my husband and I adopted such a dog, and you've already mentioned him, our precious Benny, B163.
Right.
And he's a patrol dog and a drug-sniffing dog. And as I went through the process, there were no guidelines that I could find anywhere on how to go about adopting these dogs.
So, Debbie, that was President Bush in 2006?
Or did I say it was President Clinton in 2000 who signed the House Bill 5314, yes.
Okay, good. I didn't know how recent this was. But what was happening to these military working dogs after they were through with the service?
At the end of the dog's selfless, excellent servants, when they became too old to continue to serve, they were mandatorily euthanized and necropsied. And so that was sort of an ignominious end to a fantastic veteran's life who had given so much to keep us safe.
And you talk to the war dog handlers, and they just get teared up. So
right.
What have you done?
Right. And I just wanted to mention, too, there are the 4,000 dogs who were left behind in Vietnam. And you asked me what I've done. We can't change the past, but we can change the present.
Right.
And as I was mired in all this red tape, trying to figure out how in the world to find this dog, I thought, you know, I can't unravel the red tape, and the DOD is doing the best it can because there is a war going on, and they have to be concerned with keeping us safe and fixing the handlers and the dogs and deploying them and all that thing. And they're on the front lines keeping us safe and keeping our military members safe.
Right.
And so I said, you know, I could get the information out there. So I created a website that details the how-tos, or the ABCs, if you will, of military working dog adoption. And do you want me to give you that link?
Yes, please give it right now, and then we're going to repeat it later on.
Okay, it's www.militaryworkingdogadoptions.com.
Militaryworkingdogadoptions.com.
No, you have to put an S on the adoptions, because if you don't do that, it takes you to another website.
That was the whistle. Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, militaryworkingdogadoptions.com.
And this tells somebody how to go through the process to adopt one of these wonderful dogs that are so well-trained and so loyal.
It chronicles it. It details it step by step. Benny's story's on there. There are helpful links to other websites, which will broaden your knowledge. I have even detailed what you need to have in your home ready for your military working dog to come home.
I've been on the website. It's wonderful.
Thank you so much. Well, I'm not a computer guru, but I really do believe God gave me the inspiration to do that, because this is something that matters. And everybody with whom I spoke who's met Benny, and Benny goes with me everywhere, like, oh, how do we go about doing this? Well, I sent an application to Lackland 2 years ago, and I never heard from them. And that's true. They're busy. They care so much, but they're busy. And the emphasis is not sending your application to Lackland. It's locating the dog in your regional military working dog facility by calling. And on my website, I have listed over probably 144 military working dog facilities in the United States, Puerto Rico, and Guam. I left Europe off.
There are that many.
Yes. Oh, yes. And what I did, too, is so you don't even have to mess with calling the operator. You don't even have to be bothered with doing that. I researched the numbers, and I made sure that they were right. So every one of those numbers has been called.
So you're a dog lover.
Benny is just such a light and a joy in our life.
And what did Benny do?
Benny was a drug sniffer as well as a patrol dog. And, you know, I also love cats.
Hey,
and
parents of teenagers, there's a hint for you.
Well, I will tell you this. When we picked him up, I patted the seat and gave him the wrong command. I said, up. And he jumped up on his hind legs and immediately started sniffing our truck for drugs. My husband said, honey, it's hump, not up.
he didn't know he was retired.
That's exactly right. And even now when he goes into a new room, he gives it the once over. But I do want to stress what incredible pets these animals make. 2 weeks ago, Benny got his certification as a therapy dog. So he is an officially certified therapy dog. We go into VAs. We go to nursing homes. We're looking to go into schools at therapy dogs for reading.
Debbie, I can't believe it, but I'm looking at the clock. We've run out of time already, so give that website out to us one more time.
I sure will. And y'all, save these dogs. They're awesome. We can't change the past, but we can change the future. www.militaryworkingdogadoptions.com. And God bless you, and thank you so much for your service.
And it's an honor and a privilege always. Debbie Candle, thank you very much for what you're doing for those wonderful dogs out there. Thank you, Debbie.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bob, we have some welcome homes this morning, don't we?
Yes, we do.
Troops
Dale,
coming
welcome
back.
Home. Each week on Veterans Radio, we welcome home servicemen and women who, in the service of our country, have been stationed around the world. Dateline, Ogden, Utah. The Ogden-based 172nd Medical Battalion has 80 soldiers returning home after deploying to Iraq, Qatar, and Kuwait. Dateline, Staunton, Virginia. 150 soldiers with the headquarters company, 116th Infantry Brigade Combat Team, arrived at the Thomas D. Howey Memorial Armory in Staunton, Virginia. They were deployed to Iraq. Dateline, Las Cruces, New Mexico. 120 soldiers with C Company, 2nd Battalion, 200th Infantry of the New Mexico National Guard that was based in Las Cruces were welcomed home after a tour in Iraq. Dateline, Medford, Oregon. 12 Air Force reservists from Southern Oregon got a warm welcome home after 6 months in Kyrgyzstan. The last members of the 173rd Fighter Wing are home. Dateline, Twin Cities, Minnesota. 23 members of the 247th Finance Detachment of the Minnesota National Guard will be honored at a ceremony at the Roseville Armory. The troops, who have been gone a year, provided finance and payroll management on two bases in Balad, Iraq. Man, we got to keep those payroll and allotment checks coming,
You bet. Take care of the
Dateline, Texas. One more here. Texas Army National Guard soldiers, members of A Battery, 4th Battalion, 133rd Field Artillery Unit, were deployed to Iraq last summer, and they're coming home. Each week, Veterans Radio does our own welcome home. It's sponsored each week by the Marine Scholars Program of Ave Maria University. For more information regarding the Marine Scholar Program, visit them online at avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. I'm going to repeat that again. That's the Assistant Director of Admissions, Ave Maria University, at 239-280-2552. Welcome home.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
How many of you are suffering from some kind of chronic pain? If you are, then you're just one of millions of people our age who just live with it. I strongly suggest that you give Quantum Physical Therapy a call at 734-483-9200. Quantum Physical Therapy is a multifaceted facility providing cutting-edge conventional and alternative rehabilitation services. The highly qualified and friendly staff at Quantum are the movement experts and are committed to coming up with a specific solution for your specific problem. Whether it's pain, weakness, swelling, nerve injury, amputation, disease, or age-related morbidity, they can help you lead a productive life. Quantum Physical Therapy has two locations, one at 5417 Whitaker Road in Ypsilanti, and the other at 6180 Michigan Avenue in Saline. That's Quantum Physical Therapy, 734-483-9200, or on the web at www.qptherapy.com.
He's a man of power, strong to save whose arm hath found the restless way. Who bids the mighty ocean give it from a point and in his feet.
If you received our flyer this week, you were expecting to hear the Reverend Merle Eastman talk about the night that he made his battlefield promise. Unfortunately, Merle Eastman is very, very ill, and he's in our prayers. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to read the story of what took place in Typhoon Cobra, December 17th and 18th, 1944, in which Reverend Merle Eastman made his promise to God. It was the greatest fleet that had ever sailed the seas, and it was fresh from its greatest triumph. But the hand of God was laid upon it, and a great wind blew, and it was scattered and broken upon the ocean. As the typhoon rages, several ships record the barometer at a flat 28 inches. The USS Dewey, Reverend Merle Eastman's ship, reads hers at 27.30, possibly the lowest recorded reading in history. The U.S. Third Fleet, proud in its might, lost more men and more ships sunk and damaged than in many of the engagements of the Pacific. In 500 years of naval history, there had been no wind the like of that which struck the Third Fleet, Admiral William F. Halsey commanding. Winds estimated at 145 miles per hour and probable gusts to 185 miles per hour. Three destroyers capsized and sunk. Numerous other ships heavily damaged and 146 airplanes destroyed. The war was against nature, not the Japanese. Monday, 11:45. The wind is estimated at more than 110 knots. The USS Dewey still lives, but not the destroyers Spence, Monaghan, and Hull. The USS Spence absorbs so much punishment that it literally breaks in half. The USS Monaghan, with 12 battle stars on her bridge and a veteran of combat from Pearl Harbor to Leyte, lunges to her doom. Many sailors below decks have no way of escaping as the ship capsizes, taking more than 90% of her crew to the seabed. The USS Hull, battling 90-foot waves and 150-mile-per-hour wind, loses the fight. The force of the wind lays the ship over on her starboard side and holds her down in the water until the seas come flowing into the pilot house. Young Commander Marks steps off his capsized ship and into a sea so wildly angry that life jackets are torn from the backs of the few survivors. The destroyer USS Dewey, Reverend Merle Eastman's ship, battered and wrecked, makes it through, although hurt almost mortally. The number one stack carries away and falls over the side in a clutter of wreckage, leaving a gaping wound in the main deck. The falling funnel carries away the whaleboat. The loss of superstructure and rigging eases the topside weight, and the skipper's forethought in counterballasting the port side with most of his fuel probably saved the ship. Nevertheless, green water flows over the starboard wing of the bridge as the ship lies over an estimated 80 degrees to starboard, and lives to tell about it, perhaps the first vessel in the history of the sea to survive such a roll. Reverend Merle Eastman served on the USS Dewey, and for long, eternal minutes the Dewey lay so far over on her side that the crew walked on the bulkheads, the walls of the ship, and not the deck, while water poured into her funnel. It was below decks that Reverend Eastman made his battlefield promise, "God, get me through this, and I'll serve you forever." Other ships, the typhoon was over, and other ships scouring the ocean find just a handful of spent and injured sailors. The great typhoon of 17-18 December 1944 cost 790 dead or missing. Some went down with their ships, and some were swept over the sides of ships that did not sink. One who was being swept over the side of a carrier by a huge green wave coming over the flight deck was being swept across over the edge and managed in one motion to spin, grab the edge of the flight deck, and swing himself to the deck below, where he gathered himself up and made his way back up to the flight deck. Later, he led a crew that brought the dead from the inferno that raging below. He rescued the injured, and he fought the fires until they were all doused. In the words of Admiral Halsey, the leadership of this officer was singular in saving his aircraft carrier. That man was a former All-American football player at the University of Michigan who went on to become the 38th President of the United States. His name was Gerald R. Ford. Bob? Just listening to John Steer, the Reverend John Steer, paratrooper with the 173rd Airborne Infantry in the Vietnam War. Reverend Steer personally experienced two of the worst battles of the Vietnam War, the Slope in June 1967 and the battles of Dak Tho and Hill 875 in November 1967. Reverend Sear, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Hey, thank you, Gary. Good morning.
Absolutely. It's great to have you on here, and it's a privilege. Tell us a bit about the battles of Dock Tote. Tell us about the slope. I hadn't actually heard of that one.
Well, the slope was June 22nd. It was also in Dock Tote area on the Laotian-Cambodian border. And we were moving down the trail and moved into a... We were a light company. We'd been in a lot of contact, so we was pretty light as it was. And we went down the slope into what turned out to be a horseshoe ambush, a battalion-sized ambush of North Vietnamese regulars. And we lost 70 killed, 40 wounded, and there was about a half a dozen of them, like myself, that wasn't hit at all. We were just covered with blood from carrying the wounded. But I'll tell you something. I got down to the bottom of the slope dragging ammunition down there, M60 ammunition for the machine gun, and I run across one guy shot four times in the stomach, and I got down by him, lit him a cigarette, and started talking to him. He said, "Man, get the hell out of here. Leave me alone." He said, "Get up on line." I went up on line. We had a Sergeant Hostack was one of the sergeants I seen shot through the face and knocked off a couple of his fingers, knocked his weapon out of his hand. He took off running after the enemy that just shot him, and the enemy ran off into the jungle. I mean, these guys that I served with and fought with have made me so proud. The rest of my life, I'm just so proud to have served with the 173rd Airborne.
Well, you know, there are stories like that. I mean, the 173rd Airborne was very special. It's legendary. But
we were the fire brigade for Vietnam. When there was a buildup, that's where they dropped us in.
Wasn't there a nickname for the 173rd given by
General? Herd.
The Herd. And how did that come about?
I don't know.
Oh, I know the story. I can tell you.
Yeah?
It was during, the soldiers and units out in the field that are the best are kind of the worst when they're back in the rear area.
Yeah. And they always roped us off and let everybody else go to town, and they'd bring us a couple cans of beer and stay on base.
And the 173rd was passing in review in front of General Westmoreland. He said, "They don't look like a military unit. They look like a herd." And ever since then, you guys were known as the Herd.
And we were known as his boys, too.
Exactly. He loved his
troops. He served on one of my board of directors for about 6 or 8 years before he died.
He was in World War II, Korea, and the Vietnam War, and he always considered himself a Vietnam veteran.
Right. Yeah, he was quite a guy.
So tell us about...
Well, on June 22nd, like I said, we pretty well got wiped out, and... But the men fought like crazy, and we got back to the rear, and I actually went AWOL to an Air Force base for a couple of days because I was just so filled with guilt being alive and all my friends are dead. And an Air Force sergeant probably saved my life because I was a little bit suicidal and I was just a little bit whacked out. Lose all your friends in 8 hours. But anyway, I held it together. They offered me a job in the rear, and I didn't take it. And we got 80 brand-new guys going up 3 days later, and I was out with them as a platoon leader.
And actually, the worst was yet to come for you.
Yeah, we fought a lot of battles around Dock Tote, but November 19, 1967 was the worst. In that area, for a few days there, we lost 287 paratroopers. And it was estimated, I don't know how accurately, but we killed between 12 and 1,600 of the enemy. But it was pretty horrific. I was with two men that received the Congressional Medal of Honor for posthumously. Father Water is a tremendous Catholic priest that traveled with us. And whenever we had a little time, we'd sit on our pots in the trail, and he'd give a little bit of a mass, and then the sniper would ring out, and Father Water would say, "Mass is in, to get the hell out of here," and we'd scatter. But he was a tremendous, brave man, and on Hill 875, he went outside the perimeter repeatedly, bringing in wounded comrades. By that time, I had been shot a couple times, and I was crawling around getting morphine and water for him to give to the dying and the wounded. Previously, I was with Carlos Lozada the same day, earlier that day. Carlos also received the Congressional Medal of Honor. I was his assistant gunner on the machine gun that day, and he was shot through the head, and I was shot twice in the back. And I kind of went nuts, going to go out in the blaze of glory, killing as many as I could, and a man named James Kelly come out of nowhere and knocked me down and told me to start crawling through the bush because Carlos was already dead and the gun was M60 was empty, and I had another weapon I was shooting, but I was just kind of... We were fighting so close. We were killing some people at like 20 feet, and so it was pretty crazy. But a guy named Jim Kelly actually saved my life, and we got up the hill and we pushed a bunch of other guys up that were stalled because so many of them were wounded. They said they were going to make a stand there, and I said, "No, you're not." I stuck my weapon about halfway through one guy's face and told him I was going to kill him there because I wasn't going to let him be tortured by the enemy that was coming through there. So we got up the hill, and we held for I don't know, the battle lasted 5 days altogether. I got shot later again in the foot. I was hit in the groin with some shrapnel, and then I ended up by Father Waters helping him, and then I just kind of run out of gas. So I was laying in a pile of anywhere from 40 to 60 seriously wounded paratroopers. Almost everybody was wounded, but these guys were in bad shape, and I was running out of gas myself. So I laid down with them, and then by mistake, arc lights were dropped on us, parachute flares, which lit up all the wounded. And so the enemy that had us surrounded, turned out there was about three regiments involved, North Vietnamese regulars, and we were one battalion.
About 1,200 in a regiment.
Yeah, and we was in battalion. Deep doo-doo.
Yeah, how many in your battalion?
Under 400.
They were always light out in the field.
Right. So I pulled a half a poncho over my face to hide from the shine of these flares, these aerial flares that were dropped on us, and come to find out the flares, I don't know what to say. I've heard so many stories, but the pilot, a Marine pilot, came in with two 550-pounders and thought that that was where he was supposed to drop them and dropped them dead center of our perimeter. It was like raining bodies and parts of bodies, I'm told, by the guys that were a little farther away from us that survived. It virtually killed all the wounded except very few. And there was, like I said, bodies and parts of bodies in every direction. And I woke up, and I was cussing and screaming and telling somebody to get some tourniquets on me because my right arm was gone and my right leg was just about ripped off. And nobody came. Well, then I realized something bad had happened. I didn't know it was our own people. I didn't know what it was. But anyway, I was just around death. And I was nauseous and sick, and I knew I was dying. And I was not a Christian. I'd been to religious training as a child, but I really never knew that Jesus died for my sins and loved me. And anyway, there's a scripture that says the whole earth proclaims the handiwork of God. And I thought, well, I know there's a God, because man can't make a tree or another man or a star or... Anyway, I laid there and I passed out just thinking I'll be dead in a few seconds. And I woke up a couple hours later and I was still alive. Well, that's when I start promising God the moon, you know. Lord, if you get me out of here, I'm still alive. I can't believe it. I had a renewed spirit and strength. My left arm had been paralyzed earlier where I shot twice through the back and my left shoulder. But now that my right one's blown off, my left one started working pretty good. Both my legs were just shattered. My right leg was broken three different places and then shot through the foot. So I drug myself away from this mess of carnage because apparently the enemy figured out what happened too, and they were coming through parts of our perimeter killing the wounded. So I crawled off, I don't know how far as I could go, maybe 100, 200 feet, and I pulled two dead guys over the top of me. I didn't have any clothes on because the bomb had blown my clothes off, and it was cold and rainy and damp, and I've crawled in between two dead guys and drank one of their canteens. At one point, I picked up one of their weapons, and it was shot through the handguard right in my face and exploded in my face, so I didn't pick up any more weapons. I just listened to my buddies dying, and there wasn't nothing I could do about it. And I laid there for 2 days and nights, watching the sun come up and go down, come up and go down. Finally, 4th Battalion got there and saved what was left of us. There was about 12 helicopters shot down, I'm told. I was on one of the first helicopters that got in and got anybody out. It took 6 hits. So then they took me to a MASH unit where they wrapped me in bandages from my feet to my neck. And I said, am I going to be okay? Doctor said, don't worry about it, son. You'll be fine. Well, then they put me on another chopper to another hospital. A bigger hospital in Vietnam. And they triaged me there to a shelf to die. A friend of mine there, Steve Hokanson. Was given that job, and so they just put me on a shelf, and while they worked on all the rest of them that they knew they could save, but they didn't really think they could save me. I was just like hamburger wrapped up in a poncho being held together with a plastic poncho. So anyway, eventually they got around to me, and I don't know how many days I was unconscious. I remember when I woke up, there was a little Red Cross worker there that was so excited and jumped up, and I said, I could see my arm was gone, but I said, do I still have my right leg? And she said, yes, sir, but they're talking about amputating it at the thigh. Well, thank God they didn't have to, but I spent about 9 months in the hospital promising God the moon, but I spent about 5 years staying drunk.
We're gonna get into that after the break,
okay.
John. This is an astounding story, and I think the folks out there are starting to get an idea of why they have their freedom and who they owe their freedom to.
Yeah.
We'll be right back, right after
okay,
this.
Okay, Gary, thanks.
Okay, we'll be... Stay on, we'll be right
yep.
back.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. Private First Class Henry Girk threw himself on a grenade to save his fellow soldier. Details after this.
There's always a moment of truth where I say, look, it's either put up or shut up. I had crossed that thin line. We were yelling our hearts out. Even in our weakness, even in our pain, we continued to push. I told myself, you can suck up the pain for another mile and a half, and you will be a Marine. I don't know where I got the energy from. I don't know where the pain went to. But all I know is that I had what it took. I am a United States Marine.
AFC Darrell Willis proved he could be one of us. Can you? Call 1-800-MARINES.
While his platoon was engaged in the defense of a vital roadblock on Bougainville Island, Girk, in company with another Marine, was delivering a fierce stream of fire against the main vanguard of the Japanese. Concluding from the increasing number of grenade barrages that the enemy was determined to annihilate their small two-man foxhole, he resorted to a bold and desperate measure for holding out despite the torrential hail of shells. When a Japanese grenade dropped squarely into the foxhole, Girk sacrificed himself in order that his comrade might live to carry on the fight. The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
Len Pitlack, CPA, is an award-winning consultant for the U.S. Small Business Development Center. Let him use his 25 years' experience to bring you, as an individual or small business owner, his professional and courteous tax and accounting services. Give Len Pitlack a call today at 734-993-1313.
Pat the Handyman and his team is ready to help you with your remodeling, repair, and painting projects. Call Pat the Handyman at 734-260-1158. That's 260-1158. Pat the Handyman is a veteran-owned business.
Conditioning, GPS, heat, and communications. Give Ray a call at 732-899-8010. That's 732-899-8010. Or go to SchraderYachts.com. That's SchraderYachts.com. Oh, by the way, tell Ray you heard about him on Veterans Radio, and he will personally deliver your new boat from Trader Yachts anywhere there's water. Trader Yachts, ready to serve all of your boating needs.
Back with the Reverend John Steer.
Hey.
John, the story you told is just unbelievable, and now it's 2 years later after you got out of the hospitals, but you went through what a lot of Vietnam vets went through.
I started the University of Minnesota, where I was actually called a baby killer and all kinds of junk like that. It was a good thing I didn't end up in prison. Matter of fact, I made some friends that were pretty roughnecks, either bikers or organized crime people, and thank God I got away from it eventually. But, I mean, it seemed like that was the only kind of people accepted me. I stayed drunk for about 5 years, and one day in a friend's living room, he had shared Christ with me, and I invited Christ into my heart. And he took out the hatred and the anger, and I suffered with so much guilt because, well, you know, 287 guys and dead and then 70 dead, and why am I alive, God? How come I'm alive, you know? But I realize now, I've been in the ministry now for, I don't know, 35 years, I guess. I've been in 34 countries. I've been in 6 war zones. Been to Walter Reed and I suppose 100 other small bases, Dover Air Force Base, and we do concerts and speak and like that. So my life has really been pretty rewarding since I got my act together. I've written 4 books, I guess, and we got about 20 CDs out.
And I've seen you at various Vietnam veterans reunions down in Pocono,
Indiana.
Yeah,
last year we did 95 programs last year in 17 states and 3 countries.
Now, speaking of other countries, you went to Australia and had an experience that said that to open your eyes to a different aspect of the Vietnam War. Tell us about that.
You mean with the Vietnamese?
With the Vietnamese dinner.
Yeah, I wish every Vietnam vet could have experienced this. I was invited probably along with 50 other Americans over there for the Welcome Home of Australia. This was back, I think, 85 or something like that. Anyway, they have a large Vietnamese community there, like we do in the United States, that escaped after the war. And I was invited to a Vietnamese dinner, and I couldn't believe it. All these Arvins, hundreds of them, lined up and bowed while we walked amongst them, and they cried. You know, we lost limbs and eyes and like that, but they lost their country. And there were so many that appreciated us fighting for their country, and I'd never really realized that aspect of it before, and it really softened my heart a lot, you know, because over there, many times, the Arvins and like that, you were doing all the fighting for them. They were back in the rear someplace with the gals and the booze, and you were out front. But that wasn't apparently always the case, because there's thousands of Vietnamese soldiers that did fight and escaped after the war. And like I said, they lost everything, including their country.
They did, and a lot of people forget about that. One of the things that's amazing to me is the boat people and those that escaped through the jungles. We know that 5% of the population fled and made it. We don't know how many tried and didn't make it, but that's pretty significant for people who love their country and believe that their ancestors' spirits still live there. When
exactly.
That many survived or fled, we know how tough it was for them after the communists took over. So,
like I said, I wish every Vietnam veteran could have had that experience I had, because it would definitely take a little bit of anger and hatred out of their heart.
The Vietnamese people I've met over here, I've admire so much for all that they've accomplished and for what good people they are in their
lives. You know, we've heard that they're on welfare and everything else. That's not true. They're some of the hardest working people that we have in this country.
Oh, and successful in business, I can
right.
tell you that. So tell us about you went through this period of rage, and then you found God through a friend of yours.
Right, I accepted Christ, and it just, my life changed. I quit having nightmares every night. The anger was gone and the hatred, and the next day I was knocking doors telling people about Christ. I mean, I just had to. This is the best medicine there is. I'd been to shrinks and I'd been on every kind of drugs they had, and I say, hey, I got something a lot better than that. Just ask God to help you out and believe on Jesus Christ, and he'll change your life. And he certainly has mine, and I still have my problems and like that, but God helps me make it through. And the best thing I found, you know, the scripture says, given it shall be given. And by me giving my life to help veterans and others, it has come back to me so many, many times. I mean, I just feel like I'm rich.
If there's anybody out there who would like to call in and talk to the Reverend John Steer, or give an experience of your own as to what took place with you in battle, our telephone number is 877-573-7825. That's toll-free, 877-573-7825, and we'll take your call, and you can come on, tell us your experience, or talk to the Reverend John Steer.
I've got a website here, too, Gary, if anybody wants to
please
check it out, johnsteer.com. That's it, just johnsteer.com. And then we've got I don't know much about this computer stuff, email is steer173rd, that's 173RD, @ CenturyTelNet.
Luckily you have a wife.
.net, I guess.
Okay.
So.
Luckily you have a wife that takes care of
you. She takes care of all that, man. She's the brains of this operation.
There you go.
And to all of my Vietnam veteran brothers out there, I sure love you and God bless you. And I got a good one. She's put up with me for 40 years.
And that's remarkable. I know a lot of Vietnam vets have been through multiple marriages, but I know
exactly.
A lot of them that I know. One friend married his high school sweetheart, and they've been married all these years.
Yeah.
Tell us about what you do, your work.
Well, like we did about 95 programs last year, and a lot of that is veterans reunions where I'll do entertainment like country and patriotic music on Saturday. Then the deal is they give me the stage Sunday, and so Sunday I'll have a non-denominational Christian service on Sunday, and usually I relate the sermons to something veterans can understand about Vietnam and like that.
I attended one of them in Kokomo.
Okay, yeah, well, I've been doing that for 27, 28 years, and a lot of them started with 15 people, and now we have like a couple thousand at a few of them, and so they've just grown, and the Lord's just been so good to me. We have a 501c3. We've never taken a dime for a salary out of it. We just use it to keep the work going, and we're helping support four other small ministries, and a couple of them are two veterans specifically, including a feeding program downtown Chicago every Sunday afternoon, and a drug rehab center here in Arkansas.
Have you met other veterans who have had the same experience as you with making the battlefield promise and then going on to serve God?
You know, I'm sure I have. I've heard a lot of stories, probably not most of them not quite as dramatic, I suppose. But I know the guys I knew are dead, you know, and like Father Waters, what an awesome man. He died probably 10 feet from me, and the biggest piece they found of him, I was told, was the size of a football.
Tell me about Father Waters, what he was doing.
Father Waters was going in and out of the perimeter, dragging in wounded and trying to help them. And I, for a while, I was crawling around getting water and morphine to give to him so he could give to the wounded. And he was just a busy little beaver. He was calm. He would look at you and smile at you. And, I mean, all hell is busting loose and people are dying every place. And he'd just give you kind of a silly little smile like, it's okay. It'll be all right. Don't worry about it.
Really? That's just, I haven't experienced the stories of chaplains being right up there on the front line with the troops. Was that fairly common, or was he a...
No, Father Waters was too old. He was ordered to stay out of the field, but he came back in anyway. Basically, he wouldn't do it.
He took his command from a higher authority.
That's right, and he traveled with us, and Carlos Lozada, who I was with when he got the CMH, Carlos earlier had a baby, and I seen the pictures of his baby. And he needed a crib, and he told Father Waters, Father Waters gave him the money for the crib.
Really?
I mean, that's just the kind of guy he was, yeah.
And
even when we were in the rear, and if we had permission to go into town for a few hours, I'm sure he knew what was going on, but you could always hit him up for a couple bucks.
Okay. We had a chaplain who was a Catholic priest also, and he had his head screwed on straight, and he knew... He just knew how to give you advice that worked in this world.
You bet.
And worked for servicemen and women.
Well, I wasn't Catholic, you know, but every time he had a mass, I'd be sitting there on my helmet out in front of him because he just made sense. And he preached out of the New Testament and not so much stuff we didn't understand, especially as Protestants, but just real basic common sense Jesus talk, you know.
Right. And did it give you comfort out in the field?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. And not only that, Father Waters was usually tending to the wounded and like that, but I know it would never be beyond him to pick up a weapon and do what had to be done to save lives.
I've told this story before about the Marine medic corpsman, Navy corpsman, going out with the Marines, and I asked him what kind of a weapon he carried, and he said, well, I'm authorized to .45, but I carry extra field dressings instead.
Yeah.
Those are the bravest people.
You better believe it.
Yeah. And so... tell us a little bit more about what took... We've got a minute and a half. A little bit more about what took place on the Hill.
I was with A Company. We were three companies. Like I said, we were a light battalion. And so we had been in a lot of contact raids, so they allowed us to bring up the rear. And so once we start making contact with these spider holes and fortified bunkers, and there was commo wire all over the side of this mountain. There were steps cut in the side of it. It was about the scariest thing you ever seen, with steam rolling off it in the morning. Anyway, we start taking contact right away, the other two companies. So we got up there with them, and then we had so many wounded in right away that they ordered A Company to go back down the hill and secure a landing zone because the trees were too big higher up on the hill. We couldn't blow them. So they dropped us in some dead cord and some C4, and we blew a landing zone. But anyway, then a bird dog or something said there's a large element of NVA coming up behind us. That's when four of us went down there, but one took off. But three of us went down there and held off a large element of NVA, buying time for our company to get back up with the battalion where they had previously dug foxholes to fill in, because they didn't have any fighting positions where they were at trying to cut a landing zone. So three of us held off a large element of NVA while the rest of them got back up the hill.
We had amazing soldiers, amazing. We've got a couple of callers on the line, but we're going to come to them after the break, which is coming up in a few seconds. You're listening to the Reverend John Steer on Veterans Radio, coming to you on the Ave Maria Radio Network.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University by combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill. The benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
Gary Lilly & Associates is now Sperry Van Ness Lilly & Associates, the newest Michigan affiliate of a leader in the commercial real estate industry, Sperry Van Ness. More than 800 Sperry Van Ness advisors in 136 markets sold nearly $11 billion in commercial real estate last year. That was done by putting the client's interest first, thereby generating maximum return for every property. When we list a property, we immediately place it on 6 internet commercial listing services and email it to 40,000 prospective buyers and 60,000 commercial brokers. We offer to split the commission 50-50. That means your interests, not ours, are placed first. To learn more, call Sperry Van Ness Lilly & Associates Commercial Realtors at 800-345-6694. That's 800-345-6694. Be advised, there is a difference. And you're back with the with Reverend John Steer. We have a couple callers on the line. Bob, who do we have first?
Okay, Gary, I have Cecilia from Okemos, Michigan.
And you have a question for the Reverend John Steer, do you, Cecilia?
Yes, thank you for taking my call. Reverend Steer, I really appreciate the story of your life, and I thank you. You're a great American, and you served us very well. Here's my question. You know, you were willing to give your life for us, and you almost did. And yet, when you came back home, you said people were unkind to you and actually, you know, humiliating or making fun of you. So my question is this. You were willing to give your life. You gave us so many years, and you went through so much. How were you able to forgive and not have a hardness of your heart towards
people? Yeah, there's no way I could, except when I invited Christ in my life. That was the first step, and it's just gradual. I mean, I still have my days and my attitudes, but I don't hate Abe people. I think they're ignorant, and I think today they ought to get off their high horse and get down and bow down to every sailor and marine and airman and an army guy that comes back from Iraq or overseas there, because we owe these guys our freedom.
We do. We certainly do. Well, God bless you. I appreciate your witness of God's love and light of Christ in the world.
Well, thank you very much.
Keep up the good spirit.
Thank you. God bless you. Bye-bye.
Thank you very
bless
much.
You.
We have another caller out of Cape Coral, Florida, who has a comment. One?
Hi, good morning.
Good morning to you. Juan Carrero, is that correct?
Corbero.
Okay. I won't try to. You're absolutely welcome. Give us your comment.
Well, I congratulate the Reverend there for he made a comment about his wife sticking around with him for about 40 years.
Yeah, right? 40 years now.
Oh, yes. Well, I'll call my wife also my wonderful wife because she stuck with me for 32 years.
God bless you.
Yeah, and thank you for your services. And pray for us because we have tomorrow our celebration dedication of our memorial veterans here in Lee County.
Okay.
We have a small mini wall.
Great.
And we're going to dedicate it tomorrow.
Thank you.
Okay, I will. I'll put you in my prayers. Thank you.
Somebody has the radio on, so if you could turn it down. We're getting a little feedback here. Is that
okay? I got it now.
All right, good deal.
So, yeah, we ask for a beautiful weather tomorrow and hopefully more attendance because this is the first time here in Lee County that we are going to have a Vietnam War Memorial.
Well, God bless you. We will. I'll put you in my prayers today.
Thank you, Reverend, and God bless you. And,
thank you, brother.
And all people listening to different radio this morning, God bless you all. Bye-bye.
God bless you. Thank you, brother.
And God bless you. And as long as we're talking about people to keep in the prayers, Father Phil Saloy, who is the national chaplain for the Vietnam Veterans of America.
Yeah, Phil and I have done some things together, I think, years ago. He's quite a brother.
Well, I asked him to phone in today, but he's down with the flu. But I also know that he's been doing a lot of counseling of the Iraq and Afghanistan vets. And Father Phil's a Silver Star recipient and made the promise to God while he was on the battlefield. He was originally going to be on the show, but his PTSD has flared up because of all the help that he's giving to the Iraq vets and listening to their stories. It's bringing back a lot of his memories. So,
Father Phil today also.
Oh, please. Tell us some more of the stories of heroism that you saw on that hill and on the slope.
Well, the guys were just willing to lay down their life for each other. It wasn't something that anybody talked about. You know, we would fist fight at the drop of a hat. I can't believe the fist fights I got into in Vietnam. But when somebody's outside the perimeter and their guts are coming out, you just went and got them. That was the deal. And you know, Jesus said, greater love hath no man than this, and he'd lay down his life for a friend. I wouldn't be here today if some men weren't willing to cover my backside, and I know several people that claim that they wouldn't be around if I hadn't done my job.
I don't know if you know Dale Dye, who's done a lot of writing and consulting for the movies.
No.
Okay, Dale's a Vietnam veteran. He was a correspondent, Marine correspondent, who was in 26 battles. He wrote Platoon. He wrote
Our Father.
He did the I'm sorry. He did the consulting for Tom Hanks on Band of Brothers, and
okay.
And he told us on Veterans Radio that they're doing a follow-up to Band of Brothers, following a unit through the Pacific, and they're now filming that at this moment. But I heard him say at a convention that the military is the most honorable profession that there is. When you take your oath, you are saying that if need be, you will give up your life for the country.
That's right.
And that's not a few vacation days, a little cut in pay,
no.
A sabbatical. You are going to give up your life for this country, and no other profession do you say that.
No, and it's for real, and especially, like, not to take it from any other service, but the airborne is all volunteer. You can't get drafted to jump out of airplanes.
Right.
And so that's kind of a extra security you have when you're fighting alongside another brother that asked for it. You know, I mean.
Well, I served up in I Corps in 1966, and I got to thinking about it one day. I probably never saw a draftee in my tour in Vietnam because it was Seabees. We were surrounded by Marines.
Sure.
All volunteers.
Sure. Exactly. They didn't draft too many Marines, I don't think. They drafted some, but not that many.
It was later in the war.
Yeah.
And so when you're in the battle and you see these guys doing these unselfish thoughts, they're truly thinking of their brothers. They're thinking of the other person and not themselves.
You know, the simplest things were worth so much. Here now we're driving new cars and we got a nice house and blah blah blah. But over there, if you could scrounge up a pound cake in a can and a bar of tropical chocolate that was mostly wax, and a cup of coffee and a little cocoa and mix it together, we'd have a birthday party. Three or four of us would sit around. Each guy got about two spoons full, and we'd have a birthday party for somebody.
Is that a bit? I got a new. I didn't get a new pair of socks. One of the guys in the squad got three pairs of socks, and he kept one for himself, and he gave one pair to me and one pair to another guy. I almost got tears in my eyes.
Exactly, right.
People have no idea what the basics mean to you when you're out in the field.
You know, after June 22nd, and actually what I won't spend a lot of time, but a friend of mine got shot back in the rear, and it really made me mad. We had just lost most of the company out in the field, and a friend of mine got shot by a stupid accident. So I jumped on a helicopter and went to Da Nang. I said, to hell with this war, I quit. And I was filled up with guilt from all my friends being dead. I went to an NCO club at Da Nang. Some Air Force guys didn't want to let me in because I was covered with blood, and I had a weapon, XM-148, with a 79 in the tube and a round in the chamber. So I didn't ask. I told them, and they let me in. And I sat down, and everybody stared at me. But there was an Air Force sergeant came over and said, son, did you just come off the slope at Dock Toe? And I said, yeah, I did, Sarge. And, I mean, he treated me like $1 million. I had an abscess tooth. They got fixed. They got me clean fatigues, bought me a pitcher of beer, got me in the air-conditioned hooch. I didn't know there was air conditioning in Vietnam. I stayed there 3 days, and then I went back to my unit, and I wasn't even missed because they were still trying to organize the new guys that they were filling in from all the dead guys, you know. But, I mean, that sergeant probably saved my life because I felt so bad at that time.
Just by showing you the understanding and the kindness, but
exactly. Mostly
the understanding. General Hal Moore had the same thing when he came out of the Battle of the Idrang Valley. He and a couple of his officers walked into the club and ordered a drink, and the bartender said he wasn't going to serve them. They were so dirty. And
yeah.
Moore pulled out his .45 and laid it on the bar, and he said, "Get us the drinks." And the guy did.
They call it something else now, the 16 with the 79, but back then it was experimental. It was called an XM-148. I dropped that thing down at his belly, and I pushed the rock and roll switch to fully auto, and I could do anything I wanted to.
Sure. People back here don't understand. Well, this hour has gone by so fast.
I really appreciate being a guest on your program, and God bless all of our veterans out there.
Give us your website one more time.
Okay. Let me see, johnsteer.com.
johnsteer.com.
The email is steer173rd@centurytel.net.
And we want to thank you for being on Veterans Radio and keep doing what you're doing. I know you will. You don't need to hear it from me. You were doing it long before you ever heard of me.
Yeah, well, they made us a point of light here a few years ago, Bush Sr.
Yeah,
we're staying busy.
Okay.
God bless you.
And you too.
Thanks, Gary. Bye-bye.
Bye. We're wrapping down to the end. We want to thank our sponsors, the Marine Scholars Fund. Hey, spread the word. Get these scholarships out to the troops coming back. Quantum Physical Therapy, Legal Help for Vets, Len Pitlack, CPA, Schrader Yachts, Pat the Handyman, Sperry Van Ness, Lillian Associates, that's me. Always wanted to say that. And do business with the sponsors. Keep the show alive and let them know that you heard it on Veterans Radio. Next week, tune in. We don't have the show scheduled yet. We've got several we're working on, but it'll be another good one. So until then, we're going to leave you with the Reverend John Steer.
Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom and the power.